Hello, my name is Honey Martin. We are coming to you live from Juba. And today we are going to be looking at the new extension, the new 24 months in the revitalized peace agreement begins today, according to a circular that was published yesterday here in Juba by the Minister of Cabinet Affairs, who is expected to be joining us here. Today we are going to be looking at the significance in South Sudan's journey towards peace. February 22nd marks 5 years since the formation of the revitalized transitional government of national unity, coinciding with the conclusion of the roadmap extension. This ushers us into a new era set to run until February 2027, with a national elections scheduled for December 2026. However, as the next phase of the new transitional period begins, there are some critical tasks that remains to be completed, such as finalizing the permanent constitutions, completing the unification of forces, and addressing other key commitments. In September 2024, in accordance with Article 8.4 of the RRCs, the parties to the agreement reached a consensus to extend the interim period from February 2025 up to February 2027, adjusting the election timeline accordingly. And we are asking today as to what next, what should the parties do in order to make sure that all the incomplete tasks implemented and have election in December 2026. These are some of the questions we are going to be discussing today with my panelists here. We have now a complete panelist, though one is yet to arrive. Let me begin by welcoming Honorable Port Kang, who is the senior member of the SPLM-IO, National Minister of Petroleum, and the Deputy Chairperson of the High-Level Implementation Committee. And also, he's the Deputy Chairperson of the Government Delegation to the Tumaini Peace Initiative. Good morning, Honorable, and thank you so much for coming to our roundtable discussion once again.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
And also, I have with me here Honorable Dr. Martin Elia-Lomoro, who is the Minister of Cabinet Affairs, the Secretary General of the High-Level Implementation Committee, and Rapporteur of the Government Delegation to the Tumaini. Good morning, and you are most welcome to Redi Mirai.
Great to be here, and greetings to everybody. Thank you.
And we also have the outgoing RGMEC Interim Chairperson, Major General Retired Ambassador Charles Tai Gitwai. I understand this will be your last appearance in our studio, unfortunately.
Good morning, Sunny, and good morning, listeners.
Okay, yeah, you are checking out already, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then I have also with me here Honorable Moro Jinasho, who is the spokesperson of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, the SOAM, and also he's the chairperson of the NDC, and yes, welcome to us.
Thank you, Sunny, and thank you, listeners of Mirai FM.
Okay, right away, let's begin our discussion here. I will begin with the Honorable Dr. Martin Elia-Lomoro. You issued a statement last evening confirming the beginning of a new interim period. Could you tell us more about it? Are we beginning the new 24 months today or tomorrow?
We will begin on the 22nd of February.
Which is today.
Which is today. And, of course, you know that we went through the legal process after the expiry of the roadmap transitional extended period. And it is important that we note that, just like the roadmap, which is only an extract or derivative of the revitalized agreement on the resolution of conflict in the Republic of South Sudan, the extension we have made now is only adjustment of the schedule for implementation of the ongoing and outstanding provisions. So it's business as usual, apart from the fact that we now need to sit down with the institutions that are concerned with the implementation of the agreement in order to adjust the timelines, the start date, how long this ongoing or standing provision will take to complete, and then we have a completion date that will constitute our plan now of implementation process.
Okay, and Honorable Port Kang, as the new extension begins today, how do you assess the party's progress in implementing the peace process so far over the last 3 or 4 years?
Well, thank you so much, Sunny Martin, and thank you, listeners, for giving us your time as well. As mentioned by Dr. Martin, we officially begin at 12 a.m., the new extension. And as we are talking, we are in it, and we pray that it move well. However, I wanted to say that this time round, I think it will be important that we are honest and sincere to ourselves as parties to RRCS, given the fact that we might not have any other opportunity, or we have no other opportunity for extension apart from us taking the country for free, fair, and a credible election, so that the people of South Sudan will have the opportunity to choose their own leaders. Having said this, I would like to mention that with this extension, I think we have started it on a wrong footing, in a sense that we started with violations of RRCS, which I don't know when are we going to address them, when are we going to change that direction, because if the direction continue that way, then we are left with very little to celebrate the extension for.
Okay, could you clarify when you talk about violation to our listeners who may not be following what is going on in the country? Why are these violations taking place, and by who?
Well, thank you very much. I think recently we are all aware of changes which were done by His Excellency the President. He removed the governor of Western Equatoria, removed the Minister of Health without consultation with us in IO. He did not consult it with the leadership of IO. He took a unilateral decision, though the agreement said there must be consultation among the parties if there is need for something to happen. But on top of that, 5 minutes or 3 minutes after the removal of the governor, people went to his compound and attacked him. And you are aware that there was fighting in Western Equatoria, including the day before yesterday. There was fighting there. We also have a situation where troops are moving to Ulang Nasir in Upper Nali State to go and attack civilians. And we are wondering, what do we want to achieve out of that? The agreement is very clear when it comes to movement of forces. If you want to move forces from where they were when the cessation of hostility was signed to any other location, it must be done in connection and monitored by CITISAM, which is not the case. The JDV agree 4 months or before the extension that there shall be deployment of necessary unified forces in Nasser. But the forces that are being taken there today are not necessarily unified force. They are SSPDF. You also have a situation in Western Bargazel, something that we all agree that we shall remove all the checkpoints during the governor's forum. But again, this is not done by the JDB now. A unilateral decision was taken. And you are aware that there was also fighting in Western Bargazel. So this is basically to say, it is unfortunate that these things are happening and that we would have avoided them for the sake of peace. We would have come to this extension with our hearts open and try to do what we are supposed to, particularly the unification of forces, have the permanent constitution, do any other thing like what is mentioned earlier by Dr. Martin, things that are supposed to be done. Do them so that we take the country to election come December 2026.
Okay. And we shall be coming back for more details later on. Yes, Honorable Moroji Naisu, who is the spokesperson of SOA, how will you assess the party's progress in terms of implementing the peace process as we begin a new era today in the politics of South Sudan?
Well, thank you, Sani Martin, and thank you all the listeners and my colleagues in the studio. As you saw, first of all, we believe that the extension is very important. Is very important in the sense that we should not leave a vacuum in terms of governance. We should have the continuity of the RCS, and of course the current Aratigonu should continue as we look for means to address some of the pending tasks. But our point has been very clear from day one. Much as the technical institutions gave report and analysis was done by the high-level committee that led to subsequent determination on how long the extension should be done, our point has been very clear that with this extension, there has to be a means of dialogue among the signatories and all partners concerned, so that we will make sure this extension will not be like the past one, though there were some remarkable progress that was done in the past extension. But this, to us, is an extension that we feel should not also be re-extended.
Mm.
So in doing so, it was good for us to have dialogue and always sit to evaluate reports of the technical committees, continue to evaluate the performance of the roadmap, reprioritize tasks, and also make sure that we provide new timelines based on the situation on the ground.
Okay. And Ambassador Charles Tai Gitwai, you are the outgoing interim chairperson of RGMEC. You are the official body tasked to monitor and evaluate the 2018 revitalized peace agreement, and you have been here for a very long time, 4.5 years. How would you summarize the entire process, how it has gone so far as you are leaving the country?
Thank you, Sani Martin, and also thank you, listeners. First of all, I would like to say that it has been 4.5 years of quite an experience in this country. And also mention that, as you may recall, when I came here in August of 2020, it was when we were actually recovering, or more or less, at the time that the COVID was ravaging the world. And therefore, if you reflect from then on, you will probably see, because 4.5 years, you see that this is the time that the government was actually coming into formation. We just formed the government in February of 2020. So 6 months of thereabout is when I came. And between then and now, we would say that there has been relative peace. If you compare 2018 to 2025, and of course 2018 backwards, what I can say is that the expectations by now would have been that we would have had elections. If you recall, initially it was expected to be December of 2022. But then we had the extension that was the roadmap. Our expectations was that within that period, we would have been able to achieve what was expected to be elections last year in December. But what I can say is that there's been progressive, very slow progress, but however, there has been some progress. You cannot say that there wasn't progress. What is important is to have this period that is extended now to be a time that there need to be serious reflections as to how we move forward. More importantly, is that even though we are talking of 2 years between now and December 2026, I can tell you when we make our own analysis, you've got probably only about 18 or so months.
Mm-hmm.
Because by December, by June of 2026, it's expected that all the parties, according to the agreement, all the parties should have been able to forward their manifestos and constitutions to the National Election Commission. Voter registers should have been forwarded to the Minister, the Chair of National Election Commission in June of 2026. Therefore, basically, everything should be ready. All the resources for elections, logistics, should be ready by June 2026. If you know where the government was to dissolve on 22nd of September 2024 for us to go for elections in December 2024, then government was supposed to dissolve 22nd of September 2024 for us to go to elections 3 months before.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to apply again in December 2026. Which means that if the government is going to dissolve next year, 2026, September, then we should be ready with the constitution, with unification of forces, with all the requirements for elections. So we need to be very careful when we talk about this extension. Are we going to achieve elections in December 2026 if we do not have a deliberate sense of urgency, a serious focus with very deliberate arrangements, with serious demonstration of implementation? That is what we should do.
Okay. And Honorable Dr. Martin Eleanor, having listened to the outgoing chairperson, what are the key benchmarks the parties should now focus on to ensure that elections are delivered in December 2026, given the fact that we still have the unification to be completed, we have the unified forces, we have the constitution to be done, we have other issues also to be settled. So what should be the key, without playing politics, that can be moved forward as soon as possible? There are other things that does not require money, we understand.
Well, the foundation for the implementation of this agreement and taking the country to elections is the establishment of a national security sector. And that means that the highest priority, notwithstanding the priority constitution, which I'll come to, is that we have to complete the deployment of the forces that are graduated in phase one. And I know that the challenge there is that we don't have the arms, we don't have the guns to deploy them as proper force that can implement their duties, whether they were army to protect the territorial integrity of South Sudan, or they were police to protect the properties and the physical being of the citizens. So that's going to be the focus on how we obtain these armaments. And we spoke when we met with the UN Under Secretary for
Peacekeeping Operations.
Peace Operations, Mr. Jean-Pierre
Lacroix.
We made it very clear that we have achieved a lot in the benchmarks. We've actually completed the benchmarks that were given as conditioned for us to be able to get the arms embargo lifted. And we made it intentionally clear to him that unless there was something else, we have responded to the benchmarks, and now they should lift those sanctions. Two is the constitutional making process. I think there's a lot of progress being made which may not be obvious to many people in the institutions concerned with the elections, the National Election Commission, the Constitutional Review Commission, and the Political Parties Council. But they're making a lot of progress. Now, in order for them to achieve the objectives of their mandate, we have to push and give them the necessary funding for us to build a constitution. So we are going to write to each institution to give us an update as to what they have already done, what they're going to do in the next 3-4 months, and how much does it require to complete that particular phase of the objectives. So the constitution is going to be one of the highest priority, and probably the only challenge that may make us not to go for election, because If it does not meet the date by September 2026, then we are in a problem. Okay, so that we are going to work very hard with the commission to make sure that we have the constitution. The phase two, General Coleman Young, who is now the new NPTC NTC committee, is very serious about completing phase two. And all of us need to assist him, need to back him up with whatever we can in order for him to be able to achieve that. That takes a short time, unlike the constitution that takes about 18 months, notwithstanding the fact that some of the things have already been done. but it's going to be the highest focus.
Constitution. Yeah. Okay, Honorable Potkang, from the perspective of the SPLM-IO, because you are the one of the parties that has forces behind behind you after your party SPLM-IO and then M and A. That's what I'm told always. But now the question is that from the way you see things, the chairperson of NTC have just announced that from next month, 1st of March up to November, they are going to train 150,000 unified forces in the second phase. Now they are asking for over $95 million for the process to be accomplished. I'm sure you have seen the copy of the document. He has given much details on what should be done from the 1st of March, which is next month, up to November. From where you stand and sit and watching the agreement being implemented keenly, and also as the deputy chairperson of the high-level implementation committee, what will it take for all these critical tasks to be accomplished before September 2026 next year?
Well, thank you very much, Sunny, again for asking this question. What will it take for us to achieve this? I think number one is the will and the commitment. We must have the political will as parties to RRSS, accompanied by a commitment that we must meet our timeline that we set. That is number one. Number two, there must be funding. We all know that be it NTC or the security sector mechanisms will not be able to achieve their set timeline without the necessary funding for them to do so. So it means the second one, there must be funding. The third one, since we are talking about security sector or unification of forces, is respecting the core, respecting RRSS. We must commit to RRSS, we must commit to core, we must see into it that we have no room for violating core, but instead focus more on how do we unify these forces. As mentioned earlier by one of the speakers, that the foundation and the backbone to this agreement is the security sector reform. And in that sense, is the unification of forces. If we implement Chapter 2, one would say 50% of our problem is solved. Because by that, you will be sure that you will have hygiene in your politics and that you will have to do whatever politics you do within the parameters of the law. And now allow the law to manage politics instead of or politics managing law. So one would say that unifying the forces is paramount, but we will do so by respecting the agreement. The last on this is also by even cleaning our name as a nation and also showing our commitment to our citizens that we do what we say and that we mean what we say. Thank you.
Okay. And right away, let's find out from Honorable Moraa Ignacio. You were once involved in this security arrangement in the first phase of this peace process. And the SOA is also one of the signatories to the agreement that has forces. And you have to ensure that they are unified so that even some of your parties can be registered according to the election laws. We'll come to that later on. First of all, what is your take and what should be done in order to ensure that the proposal that has been forwarded by the chairperson of NTC, Honorable Kolba Yangjuk, just this week, that he has come up with a plan to train 150,000 unified forces in the second phase. And now he's asking for money. And money is one of the big challenges facing this implementation of the Revitalized Peace Agreement. What will it take now by all of you as parties to the agreement to ensure that this second phase is implemented, like what Honorable Port Kang said, that at least 50% of the problem would have been solved if you have a unified force.
Yes, thank you very much for the question. The experience that I have in managing this process of unification of forces is that, first, the technical output should be back to the political decisions. And the most important thing in this context is that it is General Kwal Manyang who is now the one steering the process. We expect a lot of political decisions to affect this process. Because when we started this process, first of all, movement of forces to assembly areas was very difficult. Because there are certain forces that were kept as a reserve forces, both in the SSPDF and also in the IO. There are forces that basically are meant to remain behind. This is number one.
Purposely.
Number two, the issue of disarmament was rejected in the first place, with the exception of those that voluntarily accepted to do it. This has to be taken very serious. I have been there practically doing it by myself, and I know the challenges that we faced. And this requires a lot of diplomacy in doing so. The other thing is that there is also going to be challenge of the question of every soldier must come with a gun. And we know that in the rebel camps, not all the forces are armed, because if all the forces were armed, then they would be constituting a government. And saying that, and realizing that some of the commanders realize that most of their forces are not going to be allowed to go to training centers, they will be resisting to accept the process. They would rather stay with their forces and keep their few guns with the hope of acquiring more guns than allowing a few of them only to be taken and their ranks are stripped. Because ideally coming to these training centers, you come in a military formation. And military formation is dictated and determined by the size of force that you have. So assuming you have a brigade, which is 1,700 something, and they are screened, only you have 30-something who have guns,
mm-hmm.
and the rest do not have guns, it means that you either become a first lieutenant, or if by chance, you become a captain. And there is no military general who will accept this. So the process of, the whole process of moving into this space has to be a process that needs dialogue and needs a lot of diplomatic work to be done.
Do you have the time for dialogue?
We have the time for dialogue. This is something that needs, an honest discussion between the leaders. Because what do we want? Do we only want to bring these forces to unify them, or we want to make a national army? This is the question that we must be very critical in asking.
Mm-hmm.
The other challenge that we have is, as the process goes on, there is a challenge of forces issuing statement as though they do not belong to the same country. And this is not national army. So what army are we looking at? And if we have to avoid that, it has to come from the leadership. Because it doesn't matter what programs we make as technocrats, if there is no political decision, and political will to do that, we are not going to achieve anything in this process.
Okay. Before we come to the outgoing chairperson of RGMEC, let me come to Honorable Dr. Martin Eliyalomoro. This is a very concerned issues coming from every citizen. Redimir, I've got a lot of complaints from citizens. As the reports from Citizen VM says that there are ongoing clashes in Western Equatoria, in Western Bahar Ghazal, in Nasir County of Upper Nile State. Does this threaten the integrity of the ceasefire and undermine public confidence in the peace process?
I wouldn't have thought so, because we have gone through much more complicated conflicts than what we are seeing. In Western Equatoria, I know that the president has consistently requested his brother, first vice president, to change the governor for many reasons, some of which I don't know. And I think that has not happened. So, you know, government is a very complicated structure. The president is the administrator of the whole country. He administers from the first vice president down to the ministers. So he knows by assessment in various ways who is doing what in their station as a governor or which minister is doing what in his ministry. And based on reports he gets, he will make a decision that he wishes to change X, Y, or Z. So I believe that might have been the case. Probably a collegial consultation has not resolved the aspiration of the president. That's why he changed the governor. I don't know about the reasons for the change of the Minister of Health, but I know that there's something to do with hospitals, disposition, and so on. So there is this administrative decision that the president might have to take, but I do not negate the fact that collegial consultation is necessary, and I'm sure it has probably taken place, but the response to it must have been either slow or none at all.
Mm-hmm.
But the actions on the ground in Western Equatoria, I know that the president had recalled the officer who acted in that situation, acted recklessly and caused, attacked the house of the governor and so on. If you look at the TV these days, the acting governor of Western Equatoria is doing a lot of work together with the IO, senior officials, ministers and members of parliament to try to resolve that matter. So, but in the other conflicts like in Nasser or movement of forces, I would not be familiar with because I'm not necessarily a military person. But I have the confidence that these matters will be resolved. I do not see the first vice president and the president have their ways of dealing with these situations because they are the most senior in the country. Whatever happens, all of us will be blamed.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's if you take this country back to war, all of us will be on the hot pan together. So we should continue to work together and continue to resolve these matters. I just think they are minor. They would not take the country back to war.
Okay, I am sure Honorable Potkang would like to respond that. Before he responds, like we already heard, that the peace agreement continues to face obstacles such as the low political will that was mentioned earlier, a trust deficit among the parties, and the unpredictable funding to the implementation of this peace process. How significant are these factors hindering the implementation of the peace process, and what can be done to address them?
I mean, political will has been coming up all the time. Now, political will means you have all the funds necessary and you have all the support necessary, but you did deliberately refuse to act. That's what political will is. Now, in our situation, the real challenge for us is actually funding. If we have the money, this is where you would measure the political will. But now, the challenge that we really face is the funds in that respect. And political will is not only from the IT Gono or from the president. It's for all of us, including the army, the generals controlling their stations and so on. If you are given a directive or you are expected to do something, whether you're IO or you're SOA or you're OPP, and you do not do it because you don't want to do it, then that is a lack of political will. But looking at how we've progressed from when we signed the agreement in 2018, the political trust gap has really improved substantially. The Artigonu works as a one unit. Paul and I, in the high-level steering committee, we work as one unit. We resolve issues together. We went to Tumaini, we are one unit. We work together. We make our decisions and discussions harmoniously. There's only a glitch that needs to be fixed.
Okay.
But we will cross the bridge.
All right. Yes, Honorable Potkang, the issue of trust deficit, the issue of releasing funding on time is one of the big challenges. Everywhere you go for these meetings of maybe RGMEC, CITESAM, what you hear only lack of funding. What can be done to address these challenges as we begin the next 24 months?
Thank you, Sunny, again. Well, before I come to issue of trust deficit, I would like to mention that what is happening today in Western Equatoria, in Apanal, Nasser Ulang, could undermine the whole process. Why do I say that? If I remember 2016, what led to 2016, it started in Western Bahr-Ghazal, and then two people were killed here in Juba. Then there were clashes in a law clinic. Soldiers just made there and exchanged guns, fire. And in the process, the hell broke loose. Yes, we have experienced this during this 2018 agreement, that a certain situation will happen and we would all come together and fix it. What makes it different this time is the fact that it happens, and the JDB that is charged by the agreement to have the responsibility of command and control is not sitting, because the chair of the JDB see that he cannot take permission from anybody when he was requested by his deputy that let's have a meeting so that they could resolve what is happening. That opportunity was not available. So it become difficult, because the JDB have responsibility. If such issues arises, they sit together, send a team together, talk to the people, help those responsible to account. But that's not happening now as we speak. Yes, Dr. Martin mentioned earlier the president order for the arrest of or recall the officers who were involved in the process of Western Equatoria. But I would like to inform you that unless these officers were brought to Juba last night.
Are they known?
They are known, like Nando, who was celebrating on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
When he attacked the cantonment of Ayo, and he said, I have captured the cantonment, and that he's going to pursue the governor and make sure he kill him. So the president ordered that, but nobody arrested him. So we are not sure whether there is a deliberate rejection of the president's decision, or the president changed his mind, or what happened. Nobody knows. The day before yesterday, he was seen walking in the market of Yambio, moving in the market with his forces. This is very important to mention. It's also important to mention that the removal of governor, yes, I remember the president asked, first by president at one point, and they had a discussion over it. And I had opportunity to participate in that meeting. And it was resolved that once the unification of forces is done, definitely the first by president will change him. But this time round, if there was a report, for example, that implicate the governor, it would have been best for president to call his first vice president. This is what the governor is doing. Does this person deserve to remain as a governor? I believe the first vice president would have made a decision which will not amount to violation of the agreement, because he is charged with the responsibility of appointing the IO shares into the government. But that did not happen. The Minister of Health, one would say that is a mere targeting. There was nothing like cytokine. There had never been any discussion around the minister. We were all shocked as to what happened, and there is no tangible reason given. But to answer your question, funding, how do we get it? Yes, I agree, we may not have all that it takes. But also, Sani, there are things that do not require a lot of money. We would have achieved them. There are some, if we prioritize this agreement, as mentioned by Dr. Martin earlier, and if we prioritize it, we would have achieved a lot. Because of late, we have all been working as a unit. We made sure in the high-level committee, we create harmony. And this thing was extended to other mechanisms. We called them, we talked to them, we advised them. We say, let's work as one unit. Let's try to achieve what we are tasked to do. So I think we need to achieve that. For us to achieve it, I would like to slightly disagree that a political will in the first instance simply mean you have the will as a person. The will is there, but you may have the constraints. If the constraint is a financial constraint, fine. But let people see that you have the will. You do things that do not require finances. Now, things that require finances, if you get $2, somebody must see into it that you manage your $2 to meet what you are required to do.
Okay.
So I think if we embark on that starting today, we can achieve a lot.
All right. You are listening to The Roundtable. My name is Sani Martin, and we will be opening our lines shortly so that you can have ample time and ask your questions to the people, my panelists here in the studio. Hello and welcome to the second hour of the Roundtable. My name is Sani Martin, and today we are looking at some of the key priorities to be implemented in the new transition period as we begin the new 24 months today that will culminate with an election in December 2026. And last evening, the Minister of Cabinet Affairs, who is with me here in the studio, issued a letter confirming the beginning of the new transitional period that begins today, 22nd. And in the studio, we have Honorable Port Kangchol, Senior Member of the SPLMIO, National Minister of Petroleum, and the Deputy Chairperson of the High Level Implementation Committee. And I also have Dr. Martin Elia Lomoro, who is the Minister of Cabinet Affairs and the SG of the High Level Implementation Committee. And I also have Honorable Moro Genasho, spokesperson of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, the SOA, and the chairperson of the National Movement of for Change. And I also have the outgoing interim chairperson of RGMEC, Ambassador Charles Tai Gitwai, Major General retired, and our lines will be open to you shortly, where you can call and ask your questions. Our lines are 091-206-7879 or 091-206-7929 or 091-206-8101, or you can send us your comment to our SMS number 091-2177-141, or you can also visit our Facebook page and drop your comment there, and we will be asking. The key question we are asking today is what should be the priorities from all the parties to the agreement of 2018, what can they do in order to meet the deadline to have South Sudanese elect their preferred leaders in December 2026? These are some of the questions we are asking today, and the key priorities you have heard from them. The Minister of Cabinet Affairs says the Constitution should be the priority. And you also heard from Honorable Potkang that it's very important if we do the unification, 50% of the problem will have been solved. And Honorable Moroje Nasu said dialogue is required in the next phase two of the unification of forces, because it's very important, dialogue and diplomacy. I should ask this question before we hear from the interim chairperson. Honorable Potkang, once again, you have said that there are issues in Olang, Nasri County of Upper Nile State. There are challenges or insecurity right now in Western Equatoria State. There are problems in Western Bahar Ghazal State. And these are the symptoms which is not looking nice for the people of South Sudan who would wish to see a peaceful and prosperous South Sudan. Are the parties, leave along the JDB, the military, are the parties talking to each other right now in order to resolve these challenges? And do you think dialogue is very important at this crucial time to diffuse the tension?
Thank you once again. Yes, the parties, I don't want to lie to myself that the parties are talking to themselves. The day His Excellency the President was going to Ethiopia, His Excellency the first Pi President, after he bid farewell to the President
at the airport here,
he requested the security leaders from the advisor, Minister of Defense, the Chief of Staffs of both SSPDF and IO, the MI, the National Security on both sides. He requested them to accompany him to his office so that they can have a discussion. When they arrived there, fighting started in Nasser. The Minister of Defense requested that give us a chance to go back and so that we manage this from Bill Farm, and then we meet tomorrow. They agreed to meet on Saturday. On Saturday, nobody showed up. First by President, the next day sent me to His Excellency by President, Dr. Benjamin Bulmel, to go to him and say, look, there is need for us to have discussion around this so that we bring the situation back to normalcy, which I did, and I went to him, I informed him. He promised that he will reach out to the president and that people will have a chance to talk. That did not materialize. Until yesterday morning, His Excellency the first Vice President wrote a letter to His Excellency the President explaining the situation and requesting for a meeting so that people may have a discussion. I would say from our end, we won. Dialogue. We are ready for dialogue. We would want this situation arrested so that it does not escalate. I wanted to mention that what is happening in Upper Nile, it is bigger and it is happening in a very heavy way. And if not arrested, the results are not desirable. And I don't want to scare anybody. I don't want to to bring fear to our people. But I basically wanted to say that civilians are being targeted because your badges, two big badges, are moving to Nasser in the river. You have two gunships stationed in Malakal, moving to Nasser. And you can imagine what the result will look like, if at all that is something to go for. So us having a discussion around this is important.
Okay. Ambassador Charles Tai, what is the role of RGMEC in this scenario right now where the parties seems not to be talking and there are already visible symptoms of this agreement being threatened in different parts of the country?
Well, this is something that indeed has come to our attention, and I have also been able to receive a letter from the first vice president regarding the removal of the governor. And I made an effort. I went and met the first vice president, and he told me that they discussed with the president on the issue of the removal of the governor. And they agreed something that I cannot probably just declare here, but basically they spoke according to the first vice president, and that matter is being handled within that level. Usually, as RJ make, wherever there are such kind of issues, we normally first point of contact is government. And then, of course, after that, then we can escalate the issue to next level. But the first thing is to discuss to those principals who are basically in this issue. In regard to these other issues, I think I would like to draw your attention to Article 1.9.1, which says that the Electric Union is founded on the premise that there shall be collegial cooperation in decision-making and continuous consultations within the presidency between the president, the first vice president, and the four vice presidents to ensure effective governance during the transition period. This is important. And if we really want to have this country move forward in this particular time, there is need for a conversation between the leadership. It is a time that we will not want this country to get back to a situation that it has come from. For the last 4.5 years, we've not have had any kind of exchange between the forces in the parties, the agreement forces. The last time was around, I think, 2021 or thereabout. Well, some problems. But right now, this situation, if it is not seriously addressed, as much as it may not really be a serious problem that we would think it would escalate to a higher level or to a situation of a complete, break of war in this country, it's always important that there is a serious... it's always important to have a conversation on these issues, because these are the things that do not augur well for a country that is going for elections in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important that there is a conversation between the leaders. And what is important is to address the issue of what is attractive for elections, what will make people be happy to have elections. Because elections is the resultant effect what people want at the end. How do you prepare to get there? This is a conversation this country is wanting to have, so that they begin to think about even post-election stability. We may talk of elections, yes, but what guarantees election? What it makes election attractive? It is post-election stability. What brings us stability is the rule of law. What guarantees that rule of law? It is where you have the unified forces, which provides security, where you have a constitution, which is basically people-driven, people have agreed on how they want to be governed, people know how the constitution will be able to indicate how the resources will be shared between the center and the periphery, and also what kind of government that they're going to have, the choice of representatives. So if this country is serious about stability post-election, we need to see serious address and focus on the issue regarding constitution-making process and the unification of forces. And I want to say this, when Minister Lomuro said that it's business as usual, in my view, I thought that this extension will actually be different. It will not be business as usual. It will be a deliberate effort to see things differently, done differently. And doing things differently is not doing them the way we have probably for the last 6 years. We've not been able to see much improvement in terms of focusing on the critical requirements of constitution-making process, unification of forces, election preparations, and elections themselves. Because election preparation is a process. You can imagine you require to register voters, you require to have delineation of constituencies, you require to have voter education, you require to have all these processes. And that is the only way you can guarantee the people of South Sudan what you promised them in agreement. The promise of the agreement is that you shall deliver this country to the rule of law post-election. So my message is that I think unless we are going to really change and be able to address these things seriously, we couldn't be here in 2026 talking of the same things and you have not moved forward.
Okay.
All right. Honorable Dr. Martin Lialumoro, many South Sudanese are already sending messages with the same question, that what is the guarantee that this time around, Artigono, all the parties to the agreement, will meet the deadline in giving them the mandate to elect their own leaders? Because this is not the first time we are seeing extension. Extension has happened for the last four times, I should say, if my memory is correct at the moment. What is the guarantee? What assurances are there this time around that the new extension we are beginning today will give the mandate to the people of South Sudan to elect their own MPs, their own governors, and their own president in 2026, come December?
Well, before I go to that, let me explain what I meant by business as usual. Mm. You know, out there, people think there will be changes in the government. People think that some parties may walk out, or there will be changes of this minister, that vice president. What I'm saying, business as usual, is that the parties to the agreement are the same parties to the agreement. And if they wish to change any minister, the parties will change their minister as required by the procedure that is already in place. But that we have to be serious and be more serious than we have been is out of question. Now, the guarantee is our commitment to implement this peace, to take the people to the election. And that guarantee is commitment that we'll have, we'll find the funds necessary, complete phase two, deploy the forces, complete the constitutional process, and make it in time more vigorous, more focused, including going out there and seeking for funds and assistance for us to be helped from outside. By the way, this is not a cheap agreement. If you look at the budget of the NPTC, it's already 96, 95, around there. But that's not only NTC. The National Election Commission is asking for something like $250,000. In fact, the total budget is about $746 million. How do you raise that money with an economy that is in crisis? Because
that is for the entire process up to election time?
Yes. And not considering what has been done already.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the assessment which we made earlier on during the national pre-transitional period, is only $280 million. Now, of course, things have changed. Things are more expensive. The institutions have readjusted their budgets. And now we've moved from $285 million to $746 million.
Is that the total budget for all the
institutions?
All the institutions.
Yes.
Over how much? $700 million.
$746 million.
USD.
Yes.
Okay.
So, ask yourself, how much money can South Sudan raise alone? And this is why I'm saying we will be prioritizing those areas that are really, really important, like the phase two unification of forces, and of course the National Constitution Review Commission, together as the law, not forgetting the National Election Commission, which also have its own requirements. Like I said, they gave us a budget of $250 million. Now, where do we get all this money from in a short period of time?
Okay.
So now, I would say we, as the government, is going to do what it can do, but also we require support from outside. Like any agreement elsewhere, people have been given assistance in millions. I don't know what is wrong with South Sudan, with that the partners and the region and those who talk too much about peace in South Sudan, they don't help.
Okay. To what extent, Honorable Dr. Martin Eliomo, to what extent do you think these frequent changes of government officials is having an impact on the implementation of the agreement? Is there any impact on these frequent changes all the time?
It depends on what changes. You know, when change is only provoked by something else.
Mm-hmm.
And there is always a say in our talks that we are looking for solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody is removed, it's because that person is not performing what is expected of them.
Okay. And Honorable Potkang, according to the election laws, parties with the armed forces cannot be registered until they relinquish their military wings. As a senior member of the SPLM-IO, does that highlight the urgency of unifying forces so that your party can fully participate in the general election scheduled for December 2026?
Definitely, yes. The agreement is very clear as to who qualify to be registered, what party qualify to be registered as a political party. As long as you continue to hold on your military wing, you cannot be registered. But again, the same agreement give condition as to when do you relinquish an army. The agreement mentioned very clear that and that is Article 2.4.1, it said all the head of opposition armed groups shall continue as commanders in chief of their forces until the end of the free transitional period or until the end of the unification process. This is basically to say, unify the forces. Once that is done, we will all say goodbye to the army, to our police component, to our national security component, because they would have been part and partial of the national army, of the national police, of the national security, fire brigade, wildlife, and prison service. They would have been part of that. And the president of the republic there shall now remain the sole commander-in-chief of all those armed forces. Now, short of this, then you have no parties registered. If you don't unify forces, then we shall not be registered. And if we are not registered, we will continue to take care of our armed forces until when we unify them.
Mm-hmm.
So the best would be we abate resources, we generate the will to do so, and quickly unify all these forces, hand them over to the president, take charge as the commander-in-chief, and we go to political parties council, register our political party, and wait for election time.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Honorable Mora Janasho, the timeline availed by the chairperson of NTC, is that realistic from March to November?
For the unification of the forces?
Yes, for the 150,000. Is that timeline realistic?
Yes, that timeline can be realistic based on the technicalities and the facts on the ground. And as I echoed earlier on, there is so much that has to be done in this process, to be very sincere. Taking from the discussion in this panel, you realize that there is a lot of concerns that need to be addressed. And now it brings us to the question of leadership retreat. We need a question of leadership retreat because there is still, it appears there is a widening gap in terms of interaction of the leaders.
So you're calling for dialogue?
Yes, we need that leadership retreat.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from the dialogue,
What will it resolve, that retreat?
That retreat, you remember when we started the process of the negotiation in Addis Ababa, there was that chattel diplomacy to bridge the gaps between leaders. There are some of these silent things that do happen. And when you don't meet, sometimes you tend to misinterpret them. But it's better that these leaders meet, and then they talk on some of these things, including even the question of reshuffle. Because the question is it about placing the members of a particular group into the government, or it is about forming a government that is responsive to the needs of the people while ensuring that we have to implement the peace. Because there are also certain emerging issues, like issues of health, there are issues of cholera outbreak, there are issues of flooding, there are issues. Then if it is about protecting personal interests of political parties, then who is going to address some of these emerging issues?
Okay.
Because at the end of the day, this government falls on the people. And it should be responsive to the fact that it should address some of the needs of the people, because we will continue insisting on on defining the articles of the agreement and so on, and the people are dying of hunger, they are dying of sickness, they are dying of flooding. There are some of these emerging issues. So some of this leadership retreat, dialogue and so on will help the leaders understand that it is beyond this agreement.
Okay.
Some of the needs.
All right. Our lines are now open. You can call us on 091-206-7929 or 091-206-7879 or 091-206-8101. Or you can also SMS us on our SMS number 091-2177-141. Visit our Facebook page and drop your question there. I will be reading some of them as they come in right away. Hello, Redimira. Hello.
Hello. Yes, Anwarin.
Yes, your name?
Yeah. I'm John from Bor.
Okay, John from Bor. Go ahead, John.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you very much for the discussion. I want to be specific, and I want to put my to Honorable Minister Kwang and Martin Elia. You know, when we talk about issues to do with South Sudan, we should also mind about the citizens. The agreement has been extending, and provisions, these forces after forces. Who really owns South Sudan? Is it owned by these parties, or is it owned by the citizens? That's one. The other thing is that in the country is still divided, and everyone claims portion of it, the IO and the government. When exactly are we going to stop all these kinds of expansion? Yesterday I got a written document, a communique from Martin Lear that sentenced until February 2027. That's an elected government, president will take over, and then all this will end. Do they really mind about Allah, really?
Okay. Thank you so much, John from Bor. Hello, Redimire. Hello.
Yes, this is Tango Juliet from Upper Nile, Malakal.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I have an appeal to Honorable Martin Elias Lomoro. As I'm speaking right now, I'm in Malakal town, and the situation is very tense. This is not the time for the dialogues. It is time for the order. Can Dr. Elias Dr. Elias Martin appeal to the president as the commander-in-chief of the SSPD forces in the country to recall these forces that are going to Nasser?
Okay.
Yes, the tensions are quite high. Even some people are leaving Malakal town, and the situation is really tense. The second question also is going to Dr. Elias. He has talked of the commitment, and when he read out what has been implemented, he talked of only 10%, 33%, as work in progress, and 57% has not touched. And based on what I'm hearing now from the outgoing chair of RGMX, we technically or practically left with 16 months. How practical is it now to do the 90% of the remaining activities? And you talk of the worst commitment. Does commitment mean only 10%? And how will he be able to get the financial support from the international community when he has only implemented 10%?
Okay. Thank you so much. Hello, Redimira?
No, I'm here in Juba.
Okay, go ahead, John from Juba.
Thank you. Martin, I have three questions. One question is going generally to to the participants in the studio, and the other two are going specific to the people that I will mention.
Mm-hmm.
There are four main key provisions, of which one of them is implementation of security arrangement, which is security sector reform, concerning the unification of forces, disarmament, demobilization, and reintegration. Then the two is electoral preparation that include election laws, registration, and then constitution-making process that include drafting permanent constitution within the agreed time frame, and I think they have estimated 18 months. And then the last one is population census and constituency delineation. So last week, the chairperson talked about 16 months. If they get the funding, then they will make sure that population census will be ready within the time frame they have stipulated. So I would like to ask all of them, what would be the specific thing that was not done in the previous extension that the parties to the agreement will make sure that they will commit themselves now to make sure that these four key provisions are met before election? Coming to number two question is going to Martin Elia. He gave an example of, he has been talking about the arms embargo.
Mm.
Dr. Martin Elia, the examples in other countries when it comes to elections is that police are deployed at all polling centers just to keep law and order during queuing hours and also during a voting process. Why do you always link the issue of arms embargo with elections here in South Sudan? Okay, who is currently protecting the territorial integrity of South Sudan? Now that you always say that we don't have arms, we have our army have a stick. I need you to answer that.
Okay.
Number three question is going to the outgoing chair of RGMEC, Ambassador Charles Taikitwai. Charles, when it comes to serious breaches or violations committed by any of the party in the agreement, it takes long for the RGMEC to swiftly engage the parties involved to make sure that, you know, the issues at hand are addressed promptly. Do you do this as an opportunity for you and your colleagues so that by the time the government extended the government, then it is an automatic also to have your contract extended to with your colleagues? Is that it? Then lastly,
okay,
what would be your recommendation to the incoming chair?
Okay.
As a critical thing to take by the time he goes, then he has to make that recommendation to engage the government so that thing that he did not commit himself are at least taken over by the incoming chair.
Thank you so much, John from Juba here. And some of your questions are coming in here via our Facebook page. I will be reading some of them. Let me give the chance now to my panelists here to answer some of your questions. There is a question here coming from Ngor Kur Akwef, and he's writing from Terekega County of Central Equatoria. My question goes to the Honorable Minister of Cabinet Affairs. Why is it very difficult for South Sudan to silence guns in the country? Everywhere is chaos in the country, insecurity. Why is it taking very long for Artigonu to silence the guns as you continue implementing the agreement? Mapur Majok is saying, how is it possible for political actors in South Sudan to think of the upcoming elections slated for December 2026 when citizens are likely, starvation is going on, the humanitarian situation in the country is there, no salaries, no motivation, no accountability, no transparency. So he won't find out how do you take us to election when the humanitarian situation in the country is so dire. That's from Mapur, going to any of your panelists right here. Okay, let me begin with this question that came in from Malakal. It is going to Honorable Dr. Martin Elia Lomoro. All your questions, I will give you the chance right now to answer all of them as we move to the next panelist. Tango Juliet from Malakal is saying, at the moment as we talk here in the studio, there's tension. People are leaving the town of Malakal, and just because of the allegation that their forces being taken to Nasir and Olang, he wants you to deliver his message to the president to recall or to postpone or to put on hold this deployment to Nasir and Olang. So let me begin with the Honorable Dr. Martin Enyalomoro.
Right. The first question was from John from Bor, where he said, when we are doing all of this, are we mindful of the citizens of South Sudan? And who owns the South Sudan, the parties or the citizens? Of course, the citizens, including those who are members of the parties to the agreement, they're also citizens.
Yeah.
So all of us who own South Sudan, it's our country. And because it is our country, which has gone for an internal conflict after a long liberation struggle, that the parties committed themselves to stop the war. And if anybody had seen the war here in Juba and seen what had gone on in 2013, 2016, you'd agree with me that it was necessary that some people sacrifice themselves in order to stop the conflict. And to stop it was to have an agreement that defines clearly that we're going to stop the war, we're going to form a government of national unity, and the mandate of the government unity is 1, 2, 3, 4 in the agreement. So this agreement belongs to us, and we are mindful of the citizens. After all, these citizens include my mother, my father, my uncle, my son, my whoever. So we are not complacent. We have committed ourselves to take the country to election, and when you elect your leaders, we will go our way if we're not elected.
Mm.
So no one should take it that we are being arrogant, we are arrogating the country to ourselves. So it is important to note this, because I hear people saying this all the time. If these parties did not come to stop the war and have this agreement, perhaps there could be something worse than that. Somebody, Tango,
from Malakal.
The situation is tense. I'm very sorry that the situation is the way he has described it. But I'm sure if a big force is moving in Malakal and moving to Nasir, somebody high up than me is watching, is taking care. I'm sure some sort of contact, some sort of solution is being sorted, is being found out. I don't know what the situation actually is, the military situation, whether these forces are going there to fight or they are going there to stop a conflict that was reported a few days ago. I don't believe that the government can be reckless to the extent of sending a large force to go and kill civilians. I don't believe that. But let us, citizens will always be, will always respond and try to protect themselves by running away if they see a large force going around, because they don't know what is going on. I equally don't know. I would have run away myself if I was in Malakal. But I believe very strongly that Bill Farm, the presidency, must be engaging in many ways, in different ways, to create the situation. Yes, if it's a question of passing message to the president, we can do that, you know, being our president and we are his team, we should be able to speak and find out what's going on. This talk about commitment to implementation of the peace, you talk about 10%, 33%, 50%. It is wrong to say 90% of the provisions have not been implemented, because there are 33% of them which are ongoing. They are being implemented. Mm-hmm. Some of them might have been finished by now since we assessed the agreement in June. So what we are saying is that there are provisions which are very critical for us to go for election. Okay?
Yeah.
So those are the provisions that we must do and implement them before September 2026. That is the unification of forces and creating a national security sector where no political party, no individual, no community shall have their own army. That's then, related to that, a question on why do we talk about arms embargo? We are talking about arms embargo in order for us to get a caliber, a type of gun that can only be owned by national security sector. different from the army, the guns which are now all over. Because now if you go to the countryside in some of the areas, you will find that the guns that they hold are the same guns that our army, our police are holding, and some of the police don't have guns. The army is there to protect the territory, but also to help in disarmament. Our citizens need to be disarmed. If we really have a political will, this political will should also go down to the citizens, to the traditional leaders, to our intellectuals, to say to the citizen, please hand over your gun, and create a situation where civilians don't have guns. And that has, if we have no opportunity to lift the arms embargo, then these guns can be given to the police so that they can protect security, the citizens, protect their properties, and bring the rule of law to be operational. This is what we mean by, we talk about removing the arms embargo. So when we talk about commitment, we are saying we are going to have a renewed commitment to make sure that the unification of forces is completed, make sure the constitution is written, and that small things that could hamper the election process are implemented in time. For example, now the phase one deployment, there are many forces not deployed because we don't have the guns.
Mm-hmm.
And as my colleague Michael Woke always say, we deploy them with sticks.
Mm-hmm.
What use are they to protect civilians if they carry sticks? There's another one about Mapur. Where? You're talking about take too long to silence the guns.
Yeah.
Yes, silence the guns because some of the guns are in the hands of civilians. And Mapur must know where he's calling from. There are people who hold guns that are nothing to do with civilians. So, and this, all of us, by the way, Honorable Moreau talked about dialogue. This dialogue should go down, actually, and make our citizens to hand over guns. Our citizens should get used to the fact that they should have no guns. They should go to the traditional weapons to protect their properties, to protect their cows, to protect their plantations and so on. But to carry guns and use it for things that, like cattle raiding or abducting children or communal feud, is not helpful. So the government equally require help from the citizens in order for us to have an environment where guns are only in the hands of those who have the legal right to hold guns, only to protect the nation.
Okay. And I think let's give the platform now to Ambassador Charles Tai Gitwai. What are your recommendations to the incoming interim chairperson? And why does it take long for RGMEC to engage the parties? Are you doing that for the benefit of your contract? This is also coming to you. Another question coming via our SMS number here is saying that are there some successful reports you are going to talk about as you leave the country? What are some of the achievements you have done as the interim chair for RGMEC over the last 4 years? These are some of the questions coming in via our SMS number. Yes, Ambassador Charles.
Thank you very much, Martin. First of all, let me specifically state that RGMEC does not implement the agreement. The responsibility for implementation of the agreement is the role of the government of South Sudan. RGMEC is a Chapter 7 of the agreement, and its role is to monitor, evaluate, and oversee the implementation of the agreement. And there is the mandate in this chapter, and there is also the procedures upon which we do this monitoring. We have an institution called Citizen VM, which is responsible for basically being on ground. It has institutions like mechanisms that basically monitor at the grassroots level, which are composed of all the political parties in this country and also international monitors. And it doesn't take long. What perhaps people do not know is that RGMEC does not necessarily have to speak publicly on some of the things that they do. Our point of engagement is the government of South Sudan. And therefore, we deal a lot with the leadership of the country, basically, We deal a lot with the conversations between ourselves and the leadership, particularly when these issues come to us. And there are systems, there are structures. For example, when the system PM gets these reports on the ground, they will come through the process of the system institution, through the chair of system PM, and then you'll forward those reports to us as RJMEC. We have a responsibility to take action on those that we think we could or that which we can do. What we can't, we forward to IGAD, or even before we get there, of course, we engage the government. So the procedures are there. What perhaps is happening most of the times, people out there may not know what we are doing, but we have a lot of discussions and conversations with the leadership regarding these issues. One of the issues, just what I've mentioned just here, just now, that I was able to engage the first vice president in regard to the issues of Western Equatoria. We are not here to extend our stay. We are a chapter in the agreement. So we shall be here until when that agreement is completed and it is implemented. The end of RJMEC is the elections. Once the elections are conducted here, and there is a government that is basically elected by the people, RJMEC and the agreement, you end that time. Well, I have been here for 4.5 years, and I want to say that this is a period. 4.5 years is more or less the same time that this agreement has been there, because if you recall 2016, 2018 when it was signed, all through up to 2019, when the first vice president came to the country, government was formed in February 2020. I came in August 2020. So basically my time here has been more or less the life of the level of the implementation that has occurred as of now. There, of course, we cannot say that there has not been any progress. I think it is important also to understand that this government has come from far. And if you compare 2018 to 2026, or rather 2025, it's very different from 2018 to up to 2011. Mm. And I think it's something that people must also appreciate. We also understand as monitors and evaluators that this country is coming as a post-conflict country. And therefore, expectations cannot be sunken. Even the issue of trust in terms of being able to develop trust in a post-conflict situation, it takes some time. But what I would say is that because this agreement is agreement of the parties, there's a party that have agreed this conversation they held to come up with this agreement, it is their responsibility to ensure that they stand in the promise that they made to the people. What we need to see is what I would call problem-solving mode. Everyone should be in a situation to focus on the way forward for this country. History will judge this leadership on the way it will deliver this country from this transition. And I want to say this as my last answer before I leave this country, that it is the responsibility of the leadership in this transition to ensure that they deliver this country to the next level. And that will be the best legacy that they can give the people of this country. And I believe I have seen some steps that are in that direction. I believe even the changes that are happened in the National Transition Committee, perhaps with the reforms there and maybe going forward, we shall be able to see a difference. What perhaps is worrying is if we begin to discuss the issues that we would have left a long time ago. These issues of fighting should not be in the 6th year of the agreement. By this time, we should have moved forward. And I think it is very important that this conversation the leadership holds, they need to discuss that where are we going these 2 years? What do we want? Do we want this country to remain among the countries that have not had elections? For example, there are very few countries in Africa which have never had elections. At least it is important that this country gets up to perpetual transitions. And I think this is a conversation that the leadership needs to sit and agree. There are specific issues that are important. Just like the minister said here, constitution-making process is a priority. Unification of force is a priority. Of course, transitional justice is part of the process of healing and reconciliating. Reconciliation is important. And I think if this can be what will drive the transition, because the transition government is actually meant to implement the agreement, then transit to elections. So that is their main objective. And I believe that this is what's going to happen. I look forward maybe coming back here to witness elections in December 2026.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Honorable Potkang, you have a couple of questions, and you can summarize them. The question here is, as the country begins a new era today, 22nd of February 2025, do you foresee the parties taking us to election in December 2026? That's from Malual Mayep from High Referendum here in Juba. And then this one is going on to Honorable Moro Janasho. Min Mawood from Lake State, Rumbek, says DDR should be one of the core, as you mentioned earlier, and we have not witnessed DDR happening since the signing of the agreement in 2018. And what will it take for people to voluntarily decide to go for DDR rather than going ahead? Or those who may qualify to go for DDR, what are some of the key priority right now that should be done to encourage people to go for DDR? That's from Mawen, as we conclude, because our time is running out. The same question here. Do you think election will happen in 2026, December? It's the same question, more or less. Yes, Honorable Potkan.
Thank you, Sunny Martin. Do I think the parties will deliver election come December 2026? I would say yes, if the following are done, things that are mentioned by John from Juba, who asked a question earlier. If we produce permanent constitution, as said by the agreement, if we unify our forces, we conduct census so that we are able to delineate constituencies, because they are dependent on that. If we are to implement a recommendation of JRC, the judicial reforms, because it's important for you to have a functional judiciary so that when there are disputes in election, people do not resort to gun. You go and seek redress from court of law, and it is mandatory that, and it is important that we must have that reform judiciary. Not a political or a partisan judiciary, but a judiciary that is there to adjudicate cases as they come to before it. We is important. It's also important to look at issues to do with transitional justice, because we must reconcile our people. We must send a message that we have a country to govern, and that this country belongs to all of us, and that we will not, and that nobody have the monopoly of the country. It belongs to all of us. We must all be given the opportunity to choose those that we would want them to be in charge of for a certain period of time, because it's always a social contract between us, the political leaders, and the citizens of any constituency. In this sense, be it the president, is the Republic of South Sudan. And then you go down until the last person who shall be elected. That is number one. Number two that I wanted to mention is that somebody talk about what is happening in Malakal. We can only encourage them to do that peacefully, because it's not a good sign, what was mentioned earlier. But I wanted to take us to the agreement, Article 2.1.10. It says the parties shall refrain from prohibited action outlined in CAR of December 21, 2017, which inter alia include but not limited to. I want you to go to 2.1.10.4, which said offensive, provocative, retaliatory action such as dissemination of hostile propaganda, recruitment, mobilization, redeployment, and movement of forces, except for the administrative and logistical movement, allow under CAR of 21st December 2017, we shall be reported to CITISAM prior to the movement, and any other activity that may jeopardize this agreement. This is what I mentioned earlier, that is important if anybody, because I'm bringing this, I look at what was sent out by the spokesperson of SSPDF. If this movement was meant for a peaceful purpose, then the agreement allow you to report it to citizen. It is verified. Then now you go. But you have a JDB that manage all this. Sit in a JDB, inform your colleagues, this is what is going to happen. Agree. Nobody will question.
Okay.
Everybody will have responsibility of informing the constituents where they come from, that somebody is coming, but is coming for a good purpose, and the intentions are good.
All right. Thank you so much, Honorable Moro Jonasho. Because of the interest of time, maybe you have only maybe 1 minute to summarize and conclude as we wind up, because we are left only 3 minutes to conclude our discussion.
Yes, thank you very much. The question on the DDR, DDR was conjoined with the Joint Military Ceasefire Commission, and when it was formed, it did a lot of remarkable work, especially making it easy for the Joint Military Ceasefire Commission as we embarked on the registration, screening, and the transportation of the forces to the training centers. However, the challenge was that DDR was underfunded during that time, and the question was whether it should only be funded by the government of Republic of South Sudan, or partners should come in, because it was central in the security sector reform. When we spoke with most of the forces, we found out that almost 40% of those involved in the conflict do not want to be in the security sector. They want to go home.
Mm-hmm.
But the question was, how would they go home? And this role should have been done by the DDR, involving voluntary registration, involving also the issue of disarmament, which was supposed to be done voluntarily.
Okay.
But until now, the DDR is still existing, and anyone who would want to voluntarily retire from active service, or those that are in opposition forces and would want to go home as the civilians, they would still come and register with the DDR.
Okay, and finally, what is your concluding remark as we begin the new transitional period today?
In 30 seconds. Yes, the transitional period, the success is going to be based on what Honorable Dr. Martin Elia Lumbro said, and the outgoing chair of the RIGMEC, and also my brother Potkan, that the issue of security arrangement and the constitutional making process are going to be central in determining the success of the extended 2 years.
Okay.
It is based on this that leaders can be able to sit and make consensus on some of the issues, or forego, or decide to maybe shift them
to
the new government that will come in.
Thank you so much, Ambassador Charles Gitwai. What is your last message as you leave the country?
I would like to tell the people of South Sudan to keep hope alive. There is a future for this country, and one day this country will have an elected government, and it is possible. And it is possible in December 2026 if the leaders remain focused and if the leaders want to make this their legacy going forward.
All right. Thank you so much, Honorable Potkang. How would you convince South Sudanese that this time round, this is the last extension they are witnessing in 2025?
Like I mentioned earlier, I would say that I'm requesting our top leadership to help focus on the implementation of RRSS, and particularly the items that I mentioned earlier, have the constitution, unify the forces, have census, implement a report of JRC for judicial reform, have transitional justice, so that come December 2026, we have election that is free, fair, and credible, but most importantly, have a body that adjudicates on cases that shall come before it from election disputes. I would like to tell our people that we are all stakeholders in this, and that is important to keep us in check as we move forward today.
All right.
Country is ours, and it belongs to all of us. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Honorable Dr. Martin Elia Lomoro, what will be done different this time around to steer the peace process moving forward and delivering election in December 2026?
Done differently is really a commitment to provide the funds necessary to implement the things that my brother Pot has outlined. There is nothing that can be done without funds. But what I want to conclude to say to the citizens of South Sudan, whatever the parties to the agreement are doing is being done in the best interest of you, the citizens of people of South Sudan, and this country. We have a very good country. People are envious and they wish they have a country like South Sudan. We don't want to break it. Having committed ourselves under the Artigonu that we have stopped war and that we will implement this agreement according to the mandate given to the Artigonu, we will be judged, all of us, as to whether we have fulfilled what we committed ourselves voluntarily to implement to stop the war and implement the agreement and take the country for election so that you have the chance to elect your leaders. We don't want you to be confused and misled. Listen to us carefully and follow what we're doing.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And that's it we have for you this weekend. We had the Honorable Pot Kang Chol, Senior Member of SPLMIO, National Minister of Petroleum and Deputy Chairperson of the High Level Implementation Committee, the outgoing Chairperson of RGMEC, Ambassador Charles Tai Gitwai, and Honorable Moro Genasho, Chairperson of the National Movement for Change and the Spokesperson for SOA. And thank you so much for listening today. And that's it we have for you today. And now we hand over to the next program coming up. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Table.